Playoffs?
We're talking about playoffs? Yeah, what is going on, Sleeper Nation? Of course, it is Natter back once again with the playoff episode of Sleeper. I'm super excited because Sheehan, unfortunately, he is one of the many NFL players who happened to catch COVID. We're going to, of course, wish him luck. But don't worry, I am entertained with the legendary editor of our Sleeper shows, Nick James. How you doing over there?
Thanks, Nanner. Thanks for having me on. Calling me up from the practice squad.
You're on my taxi squad in Dynasty, and you know, this is your shot. This is your chance. Next man up. Show me what you got.
I'm here for you.
Okay. That I appreciate. You know, I always appreciate somebody, you know, when I call their number, doesn't matter if they were warmed up, cold, anything in between, they're able to come in and join me on a show. Of course, this is going to be a legendary show. It's always a legendary show if I'm on it, of course. You know, that goes without saying. But today we're going to be talking about stuff we could have learned, we could have learned and utilized for next year. You know, mistakes that we made, obvious mistakes that we made. Not necessarily like a start and sit type of mistake. Not necessarily, oh, I drafted this player and he got injured mistake. Because, I mean, those are kind of like, not necessarily freak stuff, but stuff it's like, you can't really kick yourself about stuff like that. Unless it was ridiculously stupid. Like, oh, I benched Dalvin Cook to start my homie out here.
Alexander Madison.
Yeah, something like that. Like that, okay, you know, maybe you should kick yourself or do something even worse than that. Say you're in between Devontae Freeman and Michael Carter, and Michael Carter put up 30, and then Devontae only puts up like 8. You can't kick yourself over something like that. So we're going to try to exclude that. I'm talking more realistic redraft stuff that you could use to implement next year to utilize and really take advantage of the situations that you get put into.
Like when you kick yourself for not listening to Natter.
Yeah.
And continuing to draft Chenault.
Yes, yes. You should you should do a lot worse than kick yourself if you ever draft Chenault on your... Funny story about that. One time I was hit with a really bad bye week with a couple of injuries that I did not, of course, anticipate on the wide receiver position. So I looked at Laviska Chenault and I said, am I going to go against everything I have ever said and done and pick him up and put him in my starting roster? I almost did it. But I didn't. I had to stay true to myself and say, no, I will not put him in my starting lineup. Granted, he only put up like 3 points that game. So, of course, it was the correct decision. And that's what he does on a normal basis. But, oh, man, I did come close one time.
Yeah, and at least in what, like, Dynasty, you can always hope for next year. But this year, absolutely correct.
No, there's no next year with him. Because I'll tell you why. There is a first-round draft pick that they took named Travis Etienne, who does everything Chenault does, but better. And I'm not even saying that Etienne's going to be better, because I always say it is difficult to be good at one specific thing in the NFL. And when you get a Swiss Army knife that's supposedly good at everything, it doesn't matter, because, hey, he's good at running like a corner route, a slant, and in. It doesn't matter, because, I mean, the corner defending him, he's elite. He knows how to defend a corner, a slant, and an in. It's not like, oh, congratulations, you know how to do 5 things decent, but the elite guy knows how to do everything at an elite level. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he's in that disappointing bucket with Bryan Edwards, yes. Where it was like, you know, they had some hype coming in. They fell a little bit due to like injury concerns, especially their rookie years getting started slowly, but hoping for a year or two breakout, and neither has materialized.
No. Sometimes stuff like that isn't necessarily talent related. It's mostly situation and scheme related. And sometimes you get hindered, not necessarily by a quarterback, because Derek Carr is still, I'd put him in the 15 to 10 range quarterback rankings, in my personal opinion. And he's able to support 2 wide receivers, or 2 pass catchers, I should say. And he has always done it statistically and historically throughout his career, 2 pass catchers. And right now, in this case, it's Hunter Renfrow and Darren Waller. And, well, I mean, Darren Waller's hurt, but it would be the tight end replacement, or in this case, Josh Jacobs picking up the slack as of right now. So thinking that a third pass catcher is somehow going to be viable is unrealistic, I want to say.
Well, Jacobs getting that little uptick, I think, kind of associated with Kenyon Drake getting hurt. It was almost looking like it would be Laquon Treadwell there for a hot minute.
Laquon Treadwell.
That's when I thought Chenault was going to break out there. It's like, ooh, boom. Dan Arnold goes to IR. Here it is. Nope. Nope. Still hasn't happened. You know, you don't break out in your first 2 years. The odds are stacked against you at this point.
Yeah. It's heavily against you because at this point, usually people are already looking for your replacement at that point. And usually the coaching staff changes at that point. Usually the situation changes. The quarterback, typically if you have a couple of losing seasons, the quarterback also changes. But in this case, they just drafted a quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, long hair, don't care. And he's not doing too well right now. I'll be honest, through 4 interceptions the last game, he hasn't done too much. And realistically, now that we mention it, real fast, we could talk about it. The quarterback class that was not overly hyped, but there was a lot of hype around it. There was a lot of hope because of how strong the preseason was for these quarterbacks. And other than Mac Jones, they've all been kind of sad.
Maybe Trevor Lawrence just needs a swift kick to get him going.
A swift kick.
Whew. Urban kicking Lambo. Did you see that?
That I did not see. I did not see that.
Apparently, Urban Meyer kicked Jordan Lambeau and said, "Stop missing your freaking kicks."
I respect it. I respect it. You know what? I didn't like Urban Meyer, so I like him now.
Oh, man. This is the wrong direction to go.
I did not know he did that. I know he was going up in front of his coaching staffs and saying, "What have you guys won? I'm a winner. You guys aren't winners." Well, I mean, you kind of employ that coaching staff. So, you know, that's one thing.
And I've said it a couple times, you know, 0 days until Urban Meyer has given a reason to fire him.
You know, the problem is I love stuff like this because it's entertainment. At the end of the day, I want to be entertained. And that's entertainment.
Well, it's in a headline. It's definitely gets clicks and conversation. Mm-hmm. He's got people talking about the Jaguars, which, you know, the only people otherwise might be London.
Yeah, well, you know, I think in a couple of years or pretty soon, they might be a London team in general, especially if they lose that fan base going down over there. I think every time there's a Urban Meyer headline, a Jags fan becomes a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan.
Or in anyone else.
Yes, or anyone else, you know, especially if you have half a noggin going on, or you could be a Miami fan, you know, the Dolphins. You know, there's a lot of teams over there, a lot of teams in that vicinity. And, you know, I don't blame you if you move to another team. It's like if you're a Washington football team fan, if you're still a Washington football team fan, what are you doing with your life?
Wasting picks on like Chenault, which we learned, and trusting coaches like Urban Meyer, which we learned, to support people the way they should be instead of benching James Robinson for fumbles when he's not known for them and running his shower buddy from Ohio State into the ground instead.
To be fair, Aaron Donald would do that to anybody. Like the way he just kind of manhandled James Robinson, threw him to the ground and got that fumble. Like, I don't even blame James Robinson for that fumble. Like, you know what? You were fighting for your life and you decided to live other than hold that football.
Yeah, it's hard to predict when you've got coaches acting like that.
It is hard to predict. But I'll be honest, whenever somebody comes on the show or when somebody comes up to me and says, "Man, I hate Laviska Chenault," it's like a refresher. It feels good to know that, you know, I was right about that. You know, like Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless, if they were to say that take, they would ride this high for 5 years. They would make a career out of that take right there. And you know what? I'm going to do the same.
I figure hopping on with Natter, the first thing I need to do is mention Chenault because it's someone who I loved, who he has disparaged since day one. So he has earned that. We definitely won't bring up Gibson, who's been snapping recently.
He has. But, you know, if he does well, I'll say he's doing well. I'll be the first one to say I was wrong on something. I'm still against Rashad Bateman. I still think if you were to do a redraft or anything, you should take Elijah Moore over Bateman. I remember that was heavily debated a handful of times. I'm going to die on that hill as of right now. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm going to die on that hill.
It's kind of a hot take. I think it would be against consensus, but it's become a lot closer than it would have appeared to begin the season for sure. But quietly, Bateman last week had a pretty decent game there. And
yes,
Elijah Moore at least didn't go negative hanging out on IR.
He didn't.
But.
Uh-huh. Come on. Let's hear the but.
He might be coming back.
There we go. So real fast, before we start talking about stuff like redraft mistakes, I want to ask, since you are mostly a dynasty player, do you care specifically about when you make playoffs?
in redraft, you're fighting for any chance to slip in there and then hope that maybe week 15, half the NFL goes on COVID IR and you can squeak past the first round when you didn't deserve it. You've got no motivation other than to win now and immediately. In Dynasty, you don't want to be in the middle. You want to either be winning it or you want to be setting yourself up better for the future. So a little bit different approach from one to the other. Redraft, it's similar to win now.
Iowa, Mr. Nick James over here, he is a dynasty player. I'm more of a redraft type of person. So of course we're kind of approaching this from different mentalities.
Yeah.
Quick little story for you. I thought this was hilarious. You know, somebody might think this is extremely cocky and condescending and douchebaggery, but you know what? Sometimes you have to do it to somebody like that. So I've kind of told the masses about this one leak where, you know, we have a group chat. The group chat's fun because everybody's talking trash about each other and they talk trash a lot about me because I happen to have a phenomenal team, not to brag. Me and the second place guy, we matched up against each other last week. And of course the winner got the first round bye, and he decided to talk some friendly trash to me, which I highly encourage because I think it's fun. It's all good fun, nothing serious. So I decided to really dominate and flex my team. So what did I do in order to do that? You might be asking, Mr. Nick James. I benched Dalvin Cook.
Oh.
I benched Dalvin Cook. This is, of course, before the Thursday night game against the Steelers. And I will tell you, every single carry that Dalvin Cook had, where that hole was gashed, gaping more larger than you could fill in the blanks.
Yep.
It hurt. I'm not going to lie. It hurt.
Big girthy holes.
Uh-huh. Big There we go. There we go. Those big girthy holes that he was just rolling straight through for touchdowns. Every single one of them. I'm not going to lie. It hurt. And guess what? They were talking so much trash to me in the group chat. Like, oh, you thought you were so slick. You thought you were so cool. You did this. Benching Dalvin Cook. Wow. Imagine not having the first round bye. It was an entertaining group chat. It was all good fun. But, you know, it definitely hurt benching Dalvin Cook. I'm not going to lie. But in the moment, I felt really cool doing it. I felt like a badass doing that. But after that Thursday night game, it kind of hurt a lot.
Up until the game, I was thinking I was going to have to bench him. But when they said he was active and he was going to wear that shoulder sling or whatever so he doesn't hurt his shoulder again, the last time he wore that, he was an RB1. So my thinking was, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and take that chance. I benched him in one league where it was basically between like him, Kamara, and Aaron Jones, I think. So, you know, I still had good options otherwise. So I'm going to go ahead and bench him there and still won. But definitely understand the sting of being too scared of an injury, which we're going to have to make similar decisions for all kinds of players this week.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, we're going to talk about stuff that we learned in our redraft leagues, dynasty, things that we could implement into our next years, especially if you didn't make playoffs, and especially if you did make playoffs, because a lot of people snuck in, squeaked in, some people dominated in, and there is still stuff that you could learn to really improve your game, especially throughout the draft process and throughout the waiver wire process as well. Now, I do want to point out, I did still win that week. I still did win. I secured the number one seed. And in the group chat afterwards, I wrote, dropping Dalvin Cook. Don't need him anymore. Anybody want him? ? I didn't actually drop him, but you know, it felt good to say it.
Yeah, there you go. That's why you don't talk trash to Tom Brady, because he'll come out and make you regret it.
There we go. Now, alrighty, real fast, I do want to remind everybody to check out Sleeper Wire Show on Twitter at Sleeper Wire Show, where you get updates on your episodes, which is, of course, this one, the legendary Dynasty Wire hosted by ours truly, Nick James. Any articles written by Sheehan and the squad or any type of updates in between, Sleeper Wire Show on Twitter is the account to follow. I think that definitely has all the elite content on there, if I do so say so myself. Anything else you want to add to that one, Nick?
Just co-host Henry Sinclair, also a rock star over there, and following your boy Sheehan, who couldn't make it this evening.
Yeah.
Sheehan Solo on Twitter.
There we go. I appreciate you shouting them out because now I don't have to. Alrighty. So real fast, we need some wise words just for everybody. We need some wise words of wisdom. This one's off the head. So if you ever have a big assignment or whatever it is, project that you're currently procrastinating that you need to get done, the best thing you could ever do is just divide it down into smaller pieces. Because once it's divided into smaller pieces, then you could easily ignore it because, I mean, there's small things. It doesn't matter anymore. Just don't do them.
Nice. I have been procrastinating my Christmas shopping.
Oh, Christmas shopping.
Maybe I'll break it down into two pieces, like two nights before and the day before.
No, once you break it down, it's not a big deal anymore, so you don't have to do it.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wise.
Yeah. Like, why are you stressing over something so small? Like, it's not a big deal.
There you go.
Just break it down. It's not that hard. So I already did most of my Christmas shopping. I did it earlier in the month. I bought all gifts for my friends. I don't have friends, so it was pretty fast of Christmas shopping.
I thought for sure that's where you were going to go with wise words of wisdom.
Oh, okay.
If you hate Christmas shopping, you can always just not have friends.
That's pretty good. You know what? I wish you said that off air. That way I could use that for next week.
I can cut it out if you want.
No, it's too late. You know what? We get a double wise words of wisdom segment right here. And you know, you could put the drop for yourself. You could add, Holy Grail music coming from the background and make it look all wise and wisdom-ish.
Yep. You're definitely the wisest of the wisdom providers.
Thank you. You know what? I take heavy pride into that. So let's move on real fast to some things that you could learn in your redraft process, or anything, dynasty, redraft, any type of process that you can incorporate into your strategies to really help yourself out. And I think the biggest one, not necessarily the biggest, but something huge that people don't necessarily take account of, and that's anomalies. Anomalies in a person's statistical stat line that you, for some odd reason, anticipate that player to replicate. For example, there was in the quarterback position real fast, I'll look at Lamar Jackson. Of course, he broke the single season rushing record a couple years ago, and then his ADP, because of that, absolutely skyrocketed to what, the second round, late second to early third round. And of course, he's basically a running back in the quarterback position that happens to throw. So you can really double dip in the position power by doing that. You basically get an RB1 and a quarterback in the quarterback slot. So essentially you can have 3 to 4 running backs in your starting lineup. But the problem is with that is that you are anticipating somebody like Lamar Jackson to replicate breaking the rushing record. Like, it was a record for a reason, because it was ridiculously difficult to reach that statistical stat line. And all of a sudden you're drafting him in a position for him to have to replicate that. It's unrealistic. And because of that, you have to expect him to, you know, go to the earth a little bit and really divide up his stat lines to what is expected. And because of that, it's realistically not going to be anywhere near his ADP status. You have to draft in those second to third rounds people with proven talent and proven statistical stat lines that happen on a consistent basis. Somebody like, for example, pre-injury Julio Jones during his peak, you know, it was consistent. He was going to get you 1,400 passing yards. The touchdowns weren't necessarily there, but his reception and yards more than made up for it. Somebody like Davante Adams, his statistical stat line always is consistent with yards, receptions, targets. Of course, something like touchdowns is, you know, moves up and down. You know, it might be there, it might not be there, but the receptions, targets, yards are always going to be the statistical points that you're going after. It's just the touchdowns that are kind of the icing on the cake at that point. Anything you'd like to add, Nick?
Yeah, you don't chase touchdowns. Those are the hardest things to predict, but targets and usage and whatnot. I like what you said, embracing volatility, knowing that when someone has put up a record performance, it's hard to predict that that record performance will continue. Like watching Derrick Henry run an insane amount of times and not get hurt, and then go through half the season still not hurt. It was an anomaly that he didn't, and he finally did. So it's looking at things where it's like there's a ceiling, and if they're at it, you know, you don't want to pay the ceiling. You want to play people that have a chance to increase in value or be a value as far as where you've taken them.
Mm-hmm. Something like Travis Kelce setting the receiving yards record.
Yeah, he's still going to be the tight end one this year.
Yes, he's still going to be the tight end one this year, but a lot of people were taking him second round. And of course, in super flex leagues or tight end premium leagues, sorry, not super flex, tight end premium leagues, you know, of course that elevates, but when you get different rules for, or point standards, point aspects, you know, of course that changes a lot. But something like Travis Kelce, who currently has one end zone target this year, I don't think that was an anomaly and a stat line for you to something for you to kick yourself on. But I think expecting him to replicate what he did last year, where he was not only the best tight end by a long shot, he was one of the best wide receivers. If you were to put him and compare him with a wide receivers, I think that was also a little bit of a statistical anomaly for players to be looking at.
Yeah. You can't just copy paste last season's stats and paste it onto this year. A little bit of Kelce there is Mahomes too. The consensus number one quarterback, not necessarily performing like the consensus number one quarterback of yesteryear.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to agree with you there. I mean, of course, I still expect Patrick Mahomes to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, but when defenses adjust, the Chiefs took a while to adjust to the defenses adjusting. It's definitely, I want to say, a little bit of a surprise that Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs offense struggled the way they really did.
Like, the defense is playing better as of recently. You know, maybe they finished the season strong, but yeah, not what you would expect, but somebody's got to be taken first at a position.
Mm-hmm. There we go. I mean, so where would you put Kelce, for example, next year's redraft?
I think he's right there with Kittle and Pitts. Now, if you're going to look at the box scores for the last several years, you're going to see a one next to Kelce every single year for a bunch of years in a row. Kelce is the oldest of the lot. Kittle has not been super durable. Pitts, something that is rising, but who knows what the quarterback's going to be like next year. It hasn't necessarily panned out to be everything that you would want in like a redraft league specifically this year. Mm-hmm. Be between Kittle and Kelce. Kelce is not like Mahomes is going anywhere. Iowa. I'm not taking Kelce when Kittle's on the board. I'm hoping someone takes Kelce and then I'll take Kittle.
Fair enough. Right now, a non-tight end premium league, half point PPR, Mark Andrews currently is number one at right now 169 nice fantasy points. Travis Kelce is currently at 159. And then third on that list is 139 with George Kittle. Oddly enough, after missing a handful of games, that he is still tight end number three. Mm-hmm. Number four also, who missed a handful of games, is Dawson Knox. That is surprising and very interesting because nobody really talks about him. He is somebody that next year a lot of people are going to be talking about as one of those mid-round tight ends that you can draft that really end up becoming a steal. Or are we talking about him being one of those anomalies where you think that he's going to be disappointing, kind of like a Robert Tonyan in a way?
I hope that he doesn't go in the middle of drafts, because as far as redraft would be concerned, I don't want any of the mid-range tight ends. If they get picked there, they're just going to be some of the ones that I don't have, because I'm likely going to be taking another position at that time. But I do like what you said about Knox, because be it Dawson's Creek or the safe play Fort Knox, whatever the nickname, he has been good when healthy. I know he had a little bit of a health thing going on there for a hot second, but yeah. Something all these tight ends have in common is they're all on decent offenses.
Typically, bad offenses don't usually have good tight ends. I think if you look at all the offenses with productive tight ends, usually the offense is pretty good.
There's always going to be outliers here and there, but if a lot of your value on tight end is based on getting the touchdown, wouldn't you want the team that is likely going to score more touchdowns being the better team? So
exactly.
It makes sense.
Now, this one's going to be heavily debated, and I know the zero RB truth is out there, especially Hoos. He might want to argue and debate me on this one, but this one is, I think you never have enough running backs. And if you're ever in question when drafting, take a running back. It doesn't matter which one, just take a running back. Me and Sheehan, we're kind of on an agreement on this one now. Your first two draft picks should always be a running back. Your third draft pick should probably still be a running back. But the only time you pivot is when everybody else is going running backs. And then somebody like Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, or well now Cooper Kupp is still available.
So wide receivers only add value and stack RBs until they're gone.
Basically. The problem is with wide receivers is that people will say that you can get wide receiver depth later, but you can't get Cooper Kupp later. You're not getting a Cooper Kupp later. You're not getting a Devontae. You're not getting an elite wide receiver later in the draft. You know, you're going to get yourself like a Tyler Boyd who might put up some decent stat lines here and there. But for the most part, you know, you're looking at like 5 catches, 60 yards, and maybe he falls in for a touchdown. Mike Williams, Tyler Lockett, you know, Marquise Brown, stuff like that. Right. I mean, right now, Hunter Renfrow is up there with the elite with his stat, mm-hmm. current stat lines he's putting up right now. But I mean, realistically, there is still a massive tier drop once you give up those elite wide receiver ones. But would you rather have an elite wide receiver one or an elite running back one? I think a lot of people might want to suggest that they like running backs more than wide receivers.
We talked about it a little bit with Sheehan on the similar topic there. The RB one and the wide receiver one, the number 12 of each, score really close. But the wide receiver 36 scores about as much as the running back 24, as far as at that point in the season when we were talking. And that goes to back a lot of what you said there is, you know, yes, the top wide receivers are elite, but you are stacking running back because the disparity between an RB one and RB two is a bigger gap than the disparity between a wide receiver one and a wide receiver two and a wide receiver one and a wide receiver three. So you can get wide receiver twos and threes for lower prices and get similar output while stacking RBs and before the big cliff where it falls off.
Mm-hmm. And there's usually always wide receivers that come up and really show out and become basically every week starters. Like before Elijah Moore got injured, he showed off and started putting up, like right now in half point PPR from weeks 8 through 13, his lowest fantasy production was 7.5. And then he posted 220 burgers, and the rest of them were mid-range between 10, 12, and 17. So he is somebody that would have become an every week starter had he not hit the IR. And there's always wide receivers like those that end up coming up and showing out and becoming every week starters, like Darnell Mooney. Kendrick Bourne is close to being on there.
Yeah.
For example,
the number 36 wide receiver drafted as far as ADP for Fantasy Pros, their conglomerate ADP. Number 36 was Debo. We've seen that this has been basically a top six wide receiver, if you can even call him a wide receiver anymore.
Exactly. He has more carries and receptions, it feels like. Now, Debo Samuel's ADP was the 8th to 9th round in this year's drafts. Brandon Ayuk's ADP was the 5th round. That was, his stat line was an anomaly. Debo Samuel's was not. For his ADP to be that low and Brandon Ayuk's ADP to be that high is what people should have seen and said, no, that doesn't make any sense. Because I mean, one, Debo did get hurt, and two, Jimmy Garoppolo was not there, and they work best together. So taking a stat line for a quarterback that's not going to be there in Nick Mullins, CJ Beathard, and then expecting that same production to be there when Jimmy G's there and Brandon Ayuk's there and Debo Samuel's there and Kittle's there is unrealistic, because we know when Jimmy G's there, Debo Samuel has been the productive wide receiver. So drafting Brandon Ayuk in the 5th round, assuming that Jimmy G's still going to give Brandon Ayuk the ball the way he gives Debo Samuel the ball, is unrealistic. You should have drafted as that offense was before Jimmy G got hurt. Hopefully that makes sense. I know that kind of went on a little tangent there.
I do understand where you're coming from. With my logic as approaching it, Ayuk rookie season does well in the rookie year, which is more than you can say for like Chenault and Bryan Edwards and these other guys that busted in there, are busting now in their second year. So you kind of expect an uptick. Production and usage was strange. It's Shanahanigans. Especially you could see it now, because now he's doing well. Why weren't you using him like this at the beginning of the year? I don't know if he's getting his head on straight or what. The knock with Debo has always been the injury concern, and we saw it happen. Hurt his groin. You know, he was super sad on the sideline, but came back a couple weeks later. But he even thought, and the reason why he's reacting like that is because it's been a nonstop thing. The risk was that he's Jalen Hurd, like where he just gets injured so much that he doesn't become anything. But this is what Debo is like when he isn't hurt. And it's freaking amazing. So I understand what you're saying there. Looking at it as, wow, this is a wide gap in ADP, yet either one could be the best wide receiver on the team. You want the value guy. Should have been Debo.
It should have been, I mean, because realistically, their stat lines and that offense isn't pass heavy enough to support multiple pass catchers. You know, right now, Kittle, you're assuming he's target one. He's basically wide receiver one on that team. And then it's either going to be Ayuk or Debo Samuel. I think people should have, I don't want to say people should have, because I mean, hindsight's 2020, but I always pivoted towards Debo Samuel in my drafts, because I was confident that Jimmy Garoppolo and Shanahan would make sure Debo Samuel was the one that got his targets and his share, because that offense got to the Super Bowl with him getting that targets and that stat lines.
definitely has nothing to do with him being a 49er.
No, not at all. No, to be honest, I stayed away from a lot of 49er players this year. I don't have any shares of George Kittle. I have, you know, just in my league, I think I have one share of Deebo Samuel, and I have no running back shares. I had no Trey Sermon. I had no Jamichael Hasley, no Elijah Mitchell, no Mostert. I stayed away from that team as much as possible because I just didn't feel like it'd be a fantasy productive. I have a lot of Rams players, though. I have a lot of Rams investments on my teams. I have a lot of Cooper Kupps. I had some Robert Woods. I have a lot of Matthew Stafford.
I have noticed that the two hosts of the Sleeper Wire show each are fans of teams with incredibly ambiguous backfields.
Yes, yes, yes. We have Sheen with the Patriots and me with the Niners. And it has been a cluster, which means you should really take it from us when we say don't touch those backfields. Mm-hmm. So when we say it and people say, come up to us and they're like, oh yeah, I drafted Raheem Mostert and he got hurt. Now my running back depth is bad. You know, the only thing I could do is, well, what'd you expect?
Mm-hmm. Like when Sheen yelled at a cloud when they re-signed Brandon Bolden.
Yes, yes, yes. He's still yelling at that cloud right now. Back to re-signing and back to injury players. I don't want to sound hypocritical, but I think you should always look at injury history when looking at a player, drafting, picking up, or trading for, especially trading for, because that's the worst feeling ever, is trading for a player and then all of a sudden he gets hurt, especially when you trade for a player based off the recent games that he's currently had. And drafting non-injury prone players is so stress-free. It's so much easier to play fantasy that way. When you're looking at your opponents and they're complaining about how half their players are on the IR or hurt or questionable going into the game, and you don't necessarily have that issue. And if you do, it's not the biggest thing. You have depth to help yourself out. It definitely makes fantasy football a lot stress-free and easier to really go about.
I don't know if it's the dynasty guy in me, but that's kind of like a double-edged sword, because that will lead you to taking Derrick Henry this year, which will be great. You probably had a decent record and you're probably going to get bounced in the first week of the playoffs. You'll also avoid Will Fuller that way.
Yes.
When you see he's missed tons of games and then you don't invest in him at all, and now his face is on a milk carton.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if you draft Julio Jones and he leaves the game halfway with a hamstring injury and you get upset at Julio for getting hurt, I have to ask you, what did you expect to happen? He's known for it. He's known to leave games early with hamstring injuries. He'll have that, you know, that little gun massager, you know, those things you see him on the sideline where people kind of like massage their thighs with it. He'll do that for 5 minutes. He'll come in for a play. He'll come in for a play and then you get really happy. You're like, all right, he's good. He's good. He'll make one catch for 5 yards and then he'll go back and he'll be out for that game. And then he'll be alternating weeks whether he plays or not. And then eventually he'll hit the IR and he'll be screwed. I mean, it's been the past 3 years for Julio Jones. So when you draft Julio, especially because his ADP was late fourth round, and that happens, you have only yourself to blame.
It's the name value that pushes him up there in like a redraft setting. I think I have Julio Jones as my wide receiver. He just sounds cool to say.
It does sound cool.
It doesn't sound like a 30-year-old wide receiver with a long injury history of lower body soft tissue.
Yeah, that is rough. I do like Julio. I like seeing him healthy, but it's just not happening anymore. And I think at this point, he's becoming like an AJ Green type of player where he's not the wide receiver one, and he's not even the wide receiver one on your fantasy team. Now, we're going to talk about AJ Green a little bit later, but something like Julio Jones now, he's officially not the wide receiver one anymore. He's not even the wide receiver one on his team, like I mentioned. It makes it difficult to draft him. It makes it difficult to draft players like him, because first, I do want to dispute the Derrick Henry injury, because I think that was 100% fluke. Like, that tackle did not show anything that he would get hurt. And he's the type of player that people are too scared to tackle him. It's hard to hurt somebody when players are too scared to tackle you. It's like Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch never got hurt because people were too scared to tackle him and they had difficult time tackling him. It's not like people are trying to rip the ball from him because they know that they could tackle him. People were still trying to tackle him. That's why Derrick Henry never had fumbling issues. Marshawn Lynch never had fumbling issues. Mark Ingram never really had fumbling issues. People that run angry typically don't have fumbling issues because teams are still trying to figure out how to take him down rather than even lay a big shot on him. They can't lay a big shot on him because they can't even take him down generally.
I get it, but he's not someone who's involved in the passing game. Once they reach that 27 and a half year old threshold, the number of running backs that aren't involved in the passing game that lasted longer than that is just very tiny. Now, Henry's broken every assumption that we would have had until now. So would it have been surprising for him to stay healthy again, all 16 games, put up another 2,000-yard season? If anybody was going to do it, it would have been Derrick Henry. But that's something where even if there isn't an injury history yet, there comes a point where you've received so many carries and you're X amount of years old that it seems like if not now, soon.
Mm-hmm. That is true. In football, everybody will get injured eventually. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of the game. Everybody's going to, I mean, Christian McCaffrey coming into the NFL and coming before last year, he has missed a total of zero professional career games. High school, college, and then leading up to the NFL last year, he missed zero NFL games. Everybody thought he was injury proof. He can't get hurt. Nothing bad's going to happen to him. And then all of a sudden, you know, what was it? He pulled a hamstring. I think it was a collarbone injury.
Hamstring, ankle, that several things.
You know, it became a laundry list for Christian McCaffrey. And then, you know, of course, everybody just assumed, okay, anomaly. He's good now. It won't happen again. And now, I mean, he's back injured again, who happened to catch COVID and is out for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's going to happen eventually. So you could sit there and try to draft non-injury prone teams, which is what I specifically try to do. But injuries happen in football. So I mean, you can draft it as much as possible. It's going to happen. It's going to happen less for you because you draft less injury prone teams, which is why I still recommend it. But you should always have the backup plan.
Exactly. If you're at least trying to draft things that aren't injury prone, when the inevitable happens, maybe it happens less frequently to you.
So let's see. Say if you took Nick Chubb early or late first, and then you took Barkley, and then you took Calvin Ridley, and then you took Terry McLaurin, and then let's say Allen Robinson dropped for you, and then you took him in the fifth, something like that. You would think you'd leave that draft with absolute steal of a team. And it turns out, no. That's not what happened. Now, I mean, of course, something like Calvin Ridley, that one is nobody expected, nobody anticipated, and everybody expected a phenomenal year out of him. But guess what? That's basically an injury. And in football, it's going to happen.
Yeah. It's all a dice roll. It's just trying to set yourself up with the best odds when you roll those dice.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the times in football, and especially fantasy football, it is luck. We can sit here and try to tell you, oh, it's all skill. There is luck involved. But if you can set yourself up in a position to succeed, then the probabilities of those dice rolls more than enough will fall into your favor to the point where you're consistently on top of those standings.
That's how you get cool with lady luck.
Yeah, true. Last, before we move on, last tip is not falling in love with players. Actually, we're going to combine two tips in one. One, not falling in love with players, because like we talked about earlier, having Julio Jones on your team is cool. It sounds cool. Name brand's cool. And especially if you draft the wide receiver before him, like say you had Davante Adams and then Julio Jones, you could show your lineup to people and everyone would be like, man, you have such a good team. It's stacked. But realistically, that's not going to be the case. I mean, obviously, Davante Adams is phenomenal, but, you know, that's just an example at this point. But not falling in love with players, because they'll eventually burn you at some point when they get older or when they move teams. And they're not necessarily a scheme fit. For example, Le'Veon Bell, you know, when he moved from the Steelers to the Jets, you know, he was not a scheme fit for the Jets. And nobody was a scheme fit for Adam Gase, of course. You know, but that's a different story for another time. Not falling in love with players, I think, is a tip that I would really give, because situation changes so fast. And I was telling Nick before the show how my dynasty team was phenomenal. And then 1 year changed, and now I can't win a game to save my life, because a lot of those players, their situations changed. And when the situation changes, a lot of the times we'll still be in love with that player to the point we're still taking them, we're still drafting them, but we're sitting there scratching our heads when they're not producing the same amount of fantasy points that we anticipated.
Yep. What's good today could be old tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Especially in dynasty, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Especially, yeah, dynasty especially, but you have to realize NFL players, you know, I don't want to sound mean, but they don't age like fine wine, unless you're Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. They don't age like fine wine. They age like milk. Sometimes a phenomenal player ages and expires a little bit faster. That's the only way to say it. Like we thought Terry McLaurin, he was going to be phenomenal this year. I mean, I know quarterback situations changes, scheme kind of changes when you have a quarterback change that drastic from Fitzmagic to Henneke, but Terry McLaurin is definitely disappointing.
He was battling a little injury thing, came back, had a couple good weeks, and then now is, you know, dealing with the concussion. So I wouldn't want to be out catching passes from Heinicke to be able to sustain what my perceived wide receiver one value would be. I definitely still have hope for him in the future, and he's not exactly old yet.
No, no.
He's at the end of prime, though.
End of prime? How old is he? He's not that old, is
26 he? 26-something. If they go with a rookie QB next year, it may not be good, but they'll be one of the ones in the QB sweepstakes.
Fun, you know, a fun little question to ask you. If the Niners do trade Jimmy Garoppolo, where does he go?
That would be a good spot. The Steelers would be a good spot. The Broncos would be a good spot.
I do agree with the Steelers. I think I would like to see him on a Steeler the most. If Ben Roethlisberger retires, I would like to see Jimmy Garoppolo be a Steeler. I think Jimmy Garoppolo definitely imitates Ben Roethlisberger the most. Not size and body wise, though, but you know, that's
he would go to an offense that isn't built on a mobile quarterback, and he doesn't have to be a mobile quarterback there. So I do kind of like that a little bit. I hope they give Heinicke one more year of bridging to the next guy. I have him in a handful of places.
So would you put Terry McLaurin as a trade now candidate? Dynasty, of course.
Well, if you take the value coming into this year and your perception is that it hasn't changed very much, it wouldn't be bad to cash out at what this is now because it is somewhat of a question in the future. Because if it's a bad rookie quarterback, McLaurin could be pretty bad. Then this is wasting the last year of what would be his prime. You hope he gets a QB upgrade next year, and that's what you might sell on is the potential QB upgrade next year, and he's already good. But yeah, he's right at the end of peak at once. They get to that 27.5, that's the beginning of the decline, or you're just waiting for the beginning of the decline. So might ride him out one more year, but I wouldn't have any problem cashing out right now with the uncertainty for QB next year.
Mm-hmm. For reference, DJ Moore is 24 years old. In my opinion, is better, more productive, better suited to help your fantasy lineup. AJ Brown's also 24. I think he would also be better for your fantasy lineup. DK Metcalf is 24 years old. That one, I'd be a little questionable if he's better for your fantasy lineup than Terry McLaurin. I think they have a lot of questionable quarterback play. Not necessarily Russell Wilson I'm questioning, but maybe scheme-wise. And then if Russell Wilson decide he does want to leave, which I kind of hope he does, just for the fake, for the fun of it and the QB controversy, then it might not be good for DK Metcalf.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's the coach instead, but until Metcalf becomes slow or not huge and completely jacked, I'm definitely going to be believing in him year after year and just assume that it works itself out, whatever the problem is, gets outed.
One last tip I want to add, sprinkle in, is I chase volume. I chase volume-based wide receivers, volume-based running backs, because there's always fantasy points in volume. And I mean, especially if you're playing a PPR league, Hunter Renfro, he's the definition of volume. You know, somebody like Deontay Johnson, on a more realistic example, he's based on volume. You know, he's going to get the most targets on the Steelers. If you're getting the most targets, you're probably getting the most receptions, yards, fantasy points, touchdowns, yada, yada, yada. As long as he's catching the ball. I mean, we saw him on the Vikings. He dropped 2 touchdowns, but I'm going to save that rant for another time. But I personally like to chase volume. And because I personally like to chase volume, I feel like I personally am consistently putting up fantasy points in the wide receiver position because I have a safe floor that I could go with.
There you go. Like, you'll probably be chasing Braxton Berrios next week.
Oh, probably not. Just because of his name?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it.
It sounds like something you should start your morning with.
Braxton Berrios. That's like a cereal. Mm-hmm. It's like a cereal brand.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. There we go. I like that one. As we transition to players who are currently hurt with COVID or just questionable, and you got to make sure you have a backup plan. Like, for example, right now, straight up on the board, Josh Allen, questionable with a foot sprain. He practiced unlimited, so I'm not necessarily too worried about him, but he did come out with a walking boot, and his rushing potential is kind of everything for him because, I mean, he just had a 100-yard rushing game. That offense is a little spotty. I'll be honest with you. That passing offense is spotty, not because of the quarterback play, but because people are kind of treating him like the Chiefs, but they're not as good as the Chiefs. So they're having a more difficult time pushing the ball down the field, especially through their vertical passing attack.
Yep. Emmanuel Sanders being out definitely isn't helping, though Gabe Davis has had a couple good games.
Oh, man, I like Gabriel Davis.
But as long as Josh Allen doesn't have to face anyone else named Josh Allen, I still have some faith.
Yes. If Josh Allen does play, I think it's safe to say he's must start, right?
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson, if he plays, must start?
Yes. Now, he hasn't practiced yet, so I'm still watching and maybe rostering Huntley if I have Lamar. if I need someone to sub in.
And of course, we're recording this on a Wednesday, the 15th of December. So of course, if you're listening to this on a Friday, Saturday, and he does practice, take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. Right now, Baker is on the COVID list. Case Keenum is there. You're not starting Case Keenum. You're not starting Daniel Jones, who has not been cleared for contact yet. You're not starting Sam Darnold, of course, who is a couple weeks away. You're not starting Cam Newton. I'll tell you that right now. If you're in the playoffs and you're having one of those quarterbacks, no, you need to pivot right away. And you know what? I'll tell you right now exactly who you're pivoting. Let me go to all players. And right now, I would start Carson Wentz over every single one of those players that I mentioned. Is that fair?
Hurts is splitting reps with Minshew.
I don't trust Hurts. That's just me.
It's high ankle too, so it's going to be hard to trust him going forward, though he would have seemed to be trustworthy until the very recent history. I don't know. He faces Washington twice in these next 3 weeks. That's such a good matchup, though.
Mm-hmm. And on the opposite side of the football, Tyler Heinicke, who's rostered in about 30% of Yahoo leagues. He's going against Philly, Dallas, Philly. I know Dallas used to be a juicy matchup. It's not necessarily a juicy matchup anymore, but he's definitely an option if you want a little bit more running potential. I would still rather go Carson Wentz just because I trust him the most. Derek Carr's out there in 64% of leagues. I think he would be a decent suit going against Cleveland. Anybody else?
Don't have a problem with Carr. Heinicke did get dinged up and Kyle Allen made a short appearance at the end of last game. I even picked him up in one of the real deep 16 Superflex leagues, but also on two COVID IR as well. So if you can't find somebody, you should probably check the COVID list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo is also available. He's rostered in 35% of leagues. He is the definition of mediocrity in the quarterback position, where he's not going to blow up the stat line for you. But if you want 18 fantasy points, you put him in.
Yeah, you'd be better off doing that than rolling out Case Keenum.
There you go. Yeah, I will heavily agree with you on that one. All right, let's go back to my handy dandy list. That kind of knocks out the quarterback. Other than that, as long as your quarterback's playing, he's must start. And at this point, if you're in the playoffs, you do have a good quarterback. You do have a Josh Allen. You got a Tom Brady. You got a Matthew Stafford. You got a, you know, you got somebody startable at this point. You know, of course, in Superflex, when you're rolling out two quarterbacks, that list becomes a lot smaller, but at this point, if you're in playoffs, you either have the quarterbacks or you don't, right?
Yeah, you're going to be, if you're scouring the waivers, you know, maybe like Minshew, Case Keenum, Huntley, Glennon might play one more game if it's a super flex, but these are not options you have a lot of confidence in.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you lower down your fantasy list, Tua Tagovailoa, 43% owned, going against the Jets. If you are able to get him in a redraft league, I would do it. In one league where I own Josh Allen, I did pick up Tua just in case. Mm-hmm. I feel like he would be one of the more comfortable quarterbacks that I would like to start if Josh Allen is unable to play.
Yep, I'm there too. I'd rather do that than Mitch Trubisky.
There you go. Alrighty. So in the running backs, this one is a little bit rougher because, I mean, it's running backs. We need to know. We need to know if they're playing. We need to know if they're hurt or on the COVID list. Right now, Gaskin and Salvin Ahmed, they're on the COVID list. We have Malcolm Brown returning, Duke Johnson, and Garrett Dokes. Cool name. Yeah, I don't want to start anybody on the Dolphins, right?
Oh, no. This is...
No, this looks sad.
You'd have to be so desperate at running back.
Yeah. You're probably not in playoffs. I don't want to say you're probably not in playoffs because I know I'm in a couple leagues with, and I own Gaskin, made playoffs. But I mean, if you have Gaskin and you usually put him in your RB2 to flex spot and he's on the COVID list, that becomes a little rough for you because chances are you might not have a better option. Because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, Gaskin is in your lineup and he's a lower end RB2.
Yeah, he was great to play basically every other week, just not COVID weeks, of course.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see. Darrell Williams owned in 67% of leagues. He would be probably my number one priority because he has been phenomenal as a receiving back. And it's no coincidence that as soon as he starts having an uptick in play and an uptick in receptions and involved in that offense, that the Chiefs kind of have new life, a better step, and are able to become one of those elite offenses.
This also coincided with Josh Gordon getting his first touchdown, CEH coming back for one game and then bye, and then last week. So hand in hand, both of them kind of coming to life here. CEH kind of put up his own little respectable game, but man, Darrell Williams stealing, eating off of CEH's plate for sure.
Definitely is. Now, CEH, he had like 5 carries, happened to punch in 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, actually, I don't think the goal of those plays were him to punch it in. He was happy happened to, he actually happened to manhandle his way into that end zone. It was really cool to see. It was my biggest gripe on CEH was his inability to pound the ball. And I mean, of course it was against the Las Vegas Raiders, so I'm going to take it with a little grain of salt, but it was kind of cool to see.
Yep. About time.
There you go. So Devontae Booker, owned in Yahoo, 24% of Yahoo leagues. If Saquon's not playing, how comfortable are you putting him in your lineup?
Pretty comfortable if he's not playing. Who do the Giants play?
The Dallas Cowboys.
I would prefer him to any of the Dolphins running backs.
Yeah.
But he's put up some respectable weeks with Barkley out. I think Barkley would play, but if not, he's an option.
All right. So let me rank him. Let me list a couple people and then I'll have you rank them real fast for me. Devontae Booker, Mike Davis, or Devin Singletary? Because those are all people we're going to be questioning about, people you can find on the waivers right now. For example, I mean, Devin Singletary, he's owned in 71% of leagues, but chances are he's going to be an option. He's owned a lot. Mike Davis is owned in 53% of leagues. Either you own Mike Davis or you could potentially pick up Mike Davis and Devin Singletary.
Well, it's not Zach Moss in Singletary's way, but they didn't even rush the ball for like an entire half, if I remember correctly, last week.
As a Josh Allen owner, I love it.
Yeah. Well, I can't rank Singletary on that list low enough.
Okay.
I'm rolling with Mike Davis, even though it's been on limited touches, and obviously he's the B to Cordarrelle Patterson. I think Barkley plays, and if that's the case, then Booker seems like quite the gamble, so I'd have to put Booker at two.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah. You know, I'm going to agree with you. As much as Mike Davis has been a disappointment, he has played a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go Mike Davis, Devin Singletary, and then Devontae Booker. And that's assuming Saquon plays. If Saquon does not play, I'll probably have to go Devontae Booker, Mike Davis, and then Devin Singletary.
Devin without a single carry.
There we go. You know what? I wouldn't mind that. this one's fun because Austin Eckler, he's questionable right now. And he has been labeled the game time decision. Now, he has practiced limited in the past few weeks. And unfortunately, this episode might come out after the game. So we get to have our entertaining conversation about this. This one isn't necessarily about Eckler. This one is, I want to see if you remember last year, this happened. This is the same exact situation that happened for the Chargers because they had a Thursday night game, but it was Keenan Allen that was a game time decision. And then there was that famous little clip where he posted coming out of the tunnel. And then he said, start me. I don't know if you remember this. He said, start me. And then everybody immediately put Keenan Allen in their starting lineup. And then he played maybe the first two snaps. And then he left for the rest of the game.
I vaguely remember this, just trolling fantasy in general.
Oh, God, it was brutal. It benefited me because I happened to be playing against the person that started Keenan Allen. Whenever now seeing Austin Eckler being a game time decision on a Thursday night in playoffs, it immediately brought me straight back to that. The problem is that if Austin Eckler plays, you're starting him.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no question you're starting him. Right now he's like RB2. You're starting him. You have made playoffs because of Eckler. So if he plays, you're starting Eckler. You don't want to be like me who sits Dalvin Cook and he puts up 30 points. Now, granted, I did it out of spite, but still,
yeah,
you start him.
Yeah, you built it now.
Yeah.
You got to live there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he built you the castle. You better live by that castle unless Super Mario comes and takes it down. But, you know, if he does, then, well, you know, it's cool.
Going down with that ship.
Yeah, there you go. Now, Kareem Hunt, doubtful to play. I kind of hope he doesn't because I want to see Chubb and D'Ernest Johnson because he's going to be D'Erning those carries. I did all that just to set up that joke. DeAndre Swift not practicing. I'm not anticipating him playing. Jamal Williams is still on the COVID list. I'm putting him in the Dolphins range where, no, I'm not touching any running back backfield.
Now, if Chubb happened to be added to this extensive Browns COVID list, that would be cool. So if you got a roster spot hanging out there and you put him on the end of your bench just to see if any more people pop up on the COVID list, he could potentially be, oh, it's just him left again. But no, not interested unless Chubb happens to be COVIDified.
Yeah. Now, Sony Michel. He is owned actually a large amount, 83% of leagues. So of course, that's worth a check just in case, but I'm still not anticipating Daryl Henderson coming back. I'm definitely not expecting Derrick Henry to come back. I'm expecting people like Melvin Gordon to play, Damian Harris to play. Now, if James Conner does not play and Chase Edmonds does play, he comes back, How interested are you in putting him in a playoff scenario?
It's going to be kind of scary. I'm hoping Connor plays. I made some moves in a couple leagues where I'm going to be in the playoffs where I picked him up on the cheap. So hoping he plays for sure. Eno Benjamin hasn't been anything yet, so it's not like I think he would play more than Edmonds, but boy, that's gonna be a gamble. But at least DeAndre Hopkins won't be out there.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. Now, James Connor has looked real good. Those one-handed catches, the way he's just kind of shifting through the line, just kind of finding those holes, just being a threat on all sides of that offense. It has been fun to watch. Now, I usually have this theory and this scenario where you never take a running back after he switched teams because he always drops in production. Now, you know, the most recently, Le'Veon Bell, where he went from Steelers to Jets, dropped in production. I mean, it was a significant drop in production. And then, you know, a couple years ago, it was DeMarco Murray going from the Cowboys to, I think it was the Eagles. Significant drop, and then tight ends kind of fizzled out there. And then Derrick Henry kind of came and stole the show. Usually, and I think there's a statistic that backs me up on this one, that I think it is like 85% of running backs, after they switch teams, do not have or do not hold the same ADP that they once had. James Conner is going to be one of those anomalies.
I think there's probably some validity to that, especially since RBs have the highest value in their early years. So if they're changing teams, they've already been on a team for a few years, meaning this is going to be older RBs once they switch teams, and often the older RBs are the ones that bust. There is a similar thing with wide receivers changing teams too. Often if a wide receiver gets traded, then he's not great on the next team, but there's outliers for either. Like, you know, when Fournette goes to Tampa, but then you get like OBJ going to Cleveland. That sucked. But then Diggs goes to the Bills, and that was great. So
for wide receivers, is a little bit easier to switch teams because, I mean, we saw DeAndre Hopkins. He moved from Houston to the Cardinals. I mean, albeit he moved to a phenomenal offense that really helped him out. But
and he didn't get moved because he sucked. He got moved because the Texans are inept.
Exactly. We like the Texans. They gave us good headlines. They were this year's Jaguars last year, which is what we really like.
Yeah, at least they got David Johnson.
He's pretty cool. Got a cool name.
He was cool once.
Now let's see. Michael Carter, man of the hour, designated to return. Mohamed Salah has already said he's playing. Are you starting him? Are you putting him in? Would you do it?
It depends on how many people are on COVID on my team. If half my team's on COVID, you might not have a choice. But Michael Carter, Mr. Carter, be it from Sean to Little Wayne, I like all the Carters, including Michael Carter.
So I'll give you a scenario. Devontae Freeman or Michael Carter.
So it's interesting you say that because Burkhead is out. So that means Freeman, and who knows if David Johnson is supposed to be back. So it is going to be split there with that at least. I'm not sure.
Devontae Freeman.
Oh, I'm rolling with Freeman.
Freeman?
He's been doing it. He's been hot recently.
He has been. Unfortunately, somehow Latavius Murray had 1 carry, 1 yard, and 1 touchdown. He pulled the LeGarrette Blount stat line that I absolutely adore. but, you know, that was sad, especially if you own Devontae Freeman, because I don't think too many people started Latavius Murray, but I know a lot of people started Devontae Freeman, and he just kind of lost out on 6 fantasy points right there.
Yep.
Michael Carter or Melvin Gordon?
Melvin Gordon, questionable.
I'm assuming he plays. Now, Melvin Gordon not practice today, of course, on a Wednesday.
Definitely rolling Melvin Gordon until I see it again with Carter.
One more. Now, Aaron Jones, he had 5 carries and was out-snapped, I think it was 3-1, to A.J. Dillon. But he got 2 touchdowns. How confident are you in Aaron Jones?
Boy, you don't like to chase touchdowns. And if you're chasing volume, like you like to say there, that's a rough investment. But kind of like the Eckler argument, you're invested in this guy. I'm probably rolling him out there. It's unlikely I have a running back on my bench I would rather play.
A.J. Dillon had 15 touches. Jones had 5 carries.
I'd rather pay A.J. Dillon than Michael Carter.
Yeah, okay. All right, you know, that's actually a good spot where I could gauge where I would take a player to start. I like that one. All right, so McKissick's not practicing. And I just want to say, it's no coincidence that McKissick's not playing has had a significant upgrade to Antonio Gibson. I mean, before McKissick got hurt, Antonio Gibson was absolutely useless.
And definitely dealing with a injury where he's not super involved in the passing game. Logan Thomas also gone. McKissick also gone. Just even more Gibson opportunities there. They went as far as to sign a guy named Wendell Smallwood, as his backup to split with Jarrett Patterson, who I do like there. But yeah, they're splitting work. Neither one's getting very much. It's been the Gibson show.
It is the Gibson show. It is the Gibson show. He has been good in the absence of McKissick. I mean, even if McKissick's there, you're still starting Gibson. He is must start. That's it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now, I know he posted up a nice, what is that? Let me look at this. A nice 2.1 points. He lost the fumble. That's why. Okay. So, I mean, it could have been 5.1 points, but still, he's still in the must start category against the Philadelphia Eagles. They're going to be good matchups. I mean, he goes against Dallas again, which is not a good matchup, but I mean, you're still starting Antonio Gibson. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now, Mark Ingram, on the other hand, he's on the COVID list. Yon Kamara, you're starting him. And Kamara's RB1.
Yep. No argument.
Yeah. No argument there. Alex Collins, Adrian Peterson, and Rashad Penny, the man of the hour. Where are you going with that? Is this a pivot? Or do you just not have a choice? You own Penny, you're starting him.
On the Great Debate with Sheehan, the winner of the RB bracket, spoiler alert, was Penny. With Alex Collins kind of limited, he was already hurt and coming back and not doing much. Adrian Peterson has a hurt lower back, so until he ditches his walker, it's the Penny show.
Mm-hmm. So fun little mini story. A couple years ago, I had a bet with a buddy of mine, and it was that Rashad Penny throughout the season would average less than 5 fantasy points per game. And this was, I think, 2 years ago. Him and Chris Carson, for the most part, were splitting time, but it looks like Chris Carson was taking it, and then Penny got hurt. And of course, that still counted. So when we did the math, at the end of the season, Rashad Penny, I think, averaged 4.5 fantasy points per game. And the bet was a TV, so he bought me a nice flat screen TV.
Wow.
There we go.
When you put all your pennies together and it adds up to something nice.
There you go. That's a good one. That's a high five. You know what? A high five for you right there. That's a pat on the back. So so Burkhead's out this week. Royce Freeman's in. And I know you're banking on the Texans offense, but with running back situations the way it is he a put in?
He's a desperation play. I think David Johnson coming back, I think, is probably undervalued at this point.
Mm-hmm. I think this offense is a pivot other than Brandon Cooks. I think if you own Brandon Cooks, you start him. But other than that, I just can't sit there and recommend anybody put anybody on the Texans. I mean, they're playing the Jaguars.
Mm.
But still, I don't want you to do it. If you put in somebody like Royce Freeman in your starting lineup and he does bad, you're going to feel really stupid.
At least you can point at the Jaguars and say, yeah, there was a chance.
There was a chance. But I mean, at that point, that would be one of those situations where I do say you should probably kick yourself if you start Royce Freeman and it does end up badly or poorly at this point. Now, we are definitely running deep into this episode. I just noticed the clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know it might be late for you, so let's try to knock through this. Sorry about this, Iowa. I know. You know, you came and rock like a rock star. Fill in, and I'm doing you dirty. So let's talk about wide receivers real fast, because there's a lot more to pivot for wide receivers, and there's a lot to go after, because, I mean, obviously, there's just a lot of wide receivers. And in this position, it is kind of next man up. It's not as easy to fill in as a running back position from backup to starter. I think wide receivers is a little bit easier to navigate, to go through, because there's just a lot of depth to it. So Hopkins done for season. I know a lot of people are going to be asking, you going for Christian Kirk or AJ Green? I'm going AJ Green.
I may just upset Sheehan and go for Rondale Moore.
Oh God.
No, it's Kirk.
That is an option, but that's a high risk option. I'm going AJ Green. I think he has the most Hopkins-esque ability to duplicate with everything Hopkins does. And I think he's going to take on the Hopkins role, which I think puts him in a high position to succeed. I think we saw at the Rams Monday night where he was very productive in his role, moving the chains.
I think you can't go wrong with any of them.
Mm-hmm. I think so as well. I know McLaurin, if he's starting, if he's playing, you're starting it. Like he is your wide receiver 2, probably your wide receiver 1. Now, he's not a wide receiver 1. He's barely a wide receiver 2, but I think that's it. You're starting him. Like somebody like Adam Thielen, he's probably not playing. I think you're going to have to pivot from him one more time. And I think you're probably going to have to go with a backup wide receiver.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem rolling out KJ Osborne again.
Uh-huh. I would go for it. I know it wasn't necessarily what we want. I think we expected a little bit more, but somebody like Kendrick Bourne, if you're having to go into the waiver wire, Kendrick Bourne, Marvin Jones. I wouldn't go Corey Davis. I think he's still in the IR.
Mm-hmm.
Amon Ross St. Brown has been doing a lot better lately.
You got to play him right now.
Mm-hmm. Robbie Anderson. You mentioned Rondale Moore. No, we're not starting Henry Ruggs. I just saw him on the waiver wire. I thought that was funny. Gabriel Davis.
I like it with Emmanuel Sanders, doubtful.
Yeah. I like Gabriel Davis a lot. And I think he is, I don't want to say must start, but I think he's in the bottom tier flex to higher potential, right?
Yep. Touchdowns in back-to-back weeks.
Mm-hmm. Now, in his rookie year last year, I think he was tied for second in touchdowns out of all rookies, tying Chase Claypool while playing, I think, a quarter of the playing time compared to Chase Claypool.
Mm. Yeah, he was somewhat of a disappointment up until recently, but recently been getting hot.
Yeah, I mean, playing time and opportunity, I think, is the real reason he was able to really produce. When you're not playing half the time, it's difficult to produce unless you happen to squeak in for a touchdown. And I 100% blame Emmanuel Sanders for it. I assumed going into the season, Gabriel Davis would have wide receiver two to wide receiver one potential in that offense. And then right when they signed Emmanuel Sanders, that put me in a depression dumpster. It was definitely an unlucky rubber ducky moment.
Yes, unlucky rubber ducky.
There you go. So let's see. Elijah Moore, if he returns, you're starting him. That's it. He, you know, Elijah Moore has earned must flex to above potential. Like if you have DK Metcalf and Elijah Moore and he's playing, I'm starting Elijah Moore over DK Metcalf.
There you go.
You say that with like disappointment in your voice.
It's a jet.
It's a jet, yes, but it's Elijah Moore. He is a jet, so it kind of works out in that way.
I do like him a lot. I understand Metcalf's been a little disappointing, but that would be a tough decision.
Tough decision. But, you know, in the playoffs, when it comes to wins and losses, like right now, I'm in the playoffs, and I'm going against DK Metcalf. I'm not intimidated by seeing DK Metcalf. I'm thinking, okay, maybe he puts up like 7 fantasy points in half point PPR, unless he somehow gets a touchdown. I'm not seeing much out of him.
Yeah, not scoring a whole lot of intimidation points for sure.
No, I mean, he looks intimidating, and you know, if you count his OnlyFans, then he's very intimidating, but his actual NFL production, it's not that intimidating. All right, so let's move on real fast to the tight ends, and then we'll knock out this episode, and then I let you go. You can go to sleep. In the tight ends position right now, I mean, George Kittle is questionable. He did not practice today. I do think he plays. TJ Hawkinson did not practice. Questionable. Darren Waller also has not practiced. Questionable. He's probably on the wrong side of questionable. I do not expect any of them to play. I expect George Kittle to play. I don't expect anybody else to play. So real fast, I just do kind of want to list out a bunch of players that I would like you to see and pick up in this offense that are really hot right now. Like, for example, Pat Freiermuth.
Love it.
He's owned 68% of leagues. That's kind of high, but if he is available, you pick him up at this point.
Absolutely.
Right now, Zach Ertz, I know he's 80% of league. No, we're not going to go from him. Hunter Henry, 63% of leagues. Now, he is a little more volatile and a little more touchdown dependent, but he is there and an option. Tyler Higbee, who's recently coming back from the COVID list, I would put him in over everybody else. He's going against Seattle. Usually that is a good matchup for him to succeed. How about Jared Cook? He's rostered in 56% of leagues. He is touchdown dependent, but he's going against Kansas City.
I believe tight end is one of their weaknesses there. I wouldn't have a problem sliding him out there. I know he might be dealing with a little bit of an injury thing, but if healthy, yep, I like it. Herbert's on fire.
Mm-hmm. Last but not least, CJ Uzomah. Ah, he's difficult going against Denver. He usually is good for 6 targets. Now, what he does with those 6 targets is questionable, but he's good for 6 targets. And then hopefully he catches 5 of them for 50 yards, you have yourself a productive tight end day.
Burrow's been doing really awesome, and Uzoma's been getting enough work periodically. I'm going to be banking on him this week in the Riders League versus Hoos.
Oh, Hoos. Mm. God. Okay, hopefully I'm rooting for you to win. I enjoy when Hoos loses. It's funny. Last but not least, Tyler Conklin. Now, he was disappointing in a supposedly good situation against Pittsburgh. No Thielen. I think we all expected a little bit more out of him. He only had 2 targets, caught both of those targets for 20 yards, but we definitely expected more out of him.
One of the catches was early, and he catches it and barrels through a couple people to get, I think it was either close to the first down or the first down, and my first thought was Gronklin.
Gronklin. Oh, that's actually good. I like that one.
Yep, see if we can get that name to stick. But yeah, I need him to snap too because he's also on that team versus Hoos.
Exactly. All right, so we're rooting for Uzma and Conklin.
You got it.
Got it. All righty. So that is going to have to wrap up this sleeper episode. I know it was a little bit of a longer one. I know Nick is tired. We're going to let you go to sleep. Me, I'm full of energy right now. It's still like 8:30 p.m. for me. West Coast dominance for the win. But other than that, make sure you follow the Sleeper Wire Show on Twitter. Making sure that you're staying up to date with everybody, and hopefully you're still in playoffs by the time you're listening to this episode, and then even after this episode comes up, you're still in playoffs, you're still hanging out with us, and you're still enjoying the show. But Nick James, any last shout out?
Netter, it was awesome meeting you on pod face to face, first time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is.
Usually I'm behind the glass, you know, just watching, listening, laughing. But it was good to get on the mic here with you.
Yeah, of course it was. Usually, like, during the pre-record and after-record, I might, like, say a couple of things to see if you catch on to it and see if you pick it up. So, do you?
Yes. Occasionally, I've left it there at the beginning, you saying funny things. And then whenever Sheehan has internet problems, you just start talking to the editor.
It's a lot of people don't know, but sometimes Sheehan will cut out, especially, you know, in those UK internet. I don't even know what it is. He'll cut out periodically the episode. And then, you know, usually there's like a 10-minute period because you still have to record during it. And then obviously the editor, he'll cut and splice all that stuff out. But usually I'll just kind of talk to the editor in third person and say whatever comes to my mind.
Yep. Always funny. You're a rock star out here.
Thank you. I highly appreciate it. You're the rock star behind the scenes because you definitely make me sound good, especially when I don't. Or when I say something stupid and you decide, you know what, let me cut that out real fast.
Let me make that echo and put a bold context with it. Make sure everyone catches it.
There we go. I appreciate that. But all right. Other than that, hey, everybody, hey, good luck.